and welcome to Days of Our Lives, Mint's audio history series on liberalization and the ordinary man. Here, you will hear stories of how life changed for most people, be it the Sunshine Boy or the CEO following the reforms of 1991 in their voices.
Continuing with our series Days of Our Lives, today a bureaucrat brings to us a first-hand, behind-the-curtain account of liberalization and the story of how reforms completely altered the bureaucratic landscape of India.
When the 1991 budget speech finished, Dr. Manmohan Singh, some people who were watching it, they asked me, "Bus, that's all." So average man was psychologically prepared for far more painful changes because they realized that rupee was slipping. They realized that if India was mortgaging gold, don't forget, gold in this country is linked to the wealth which ordinary housewife has in the villages, a little bit of gold, that what you gave away to a daughter as two pieces of gold bangles would be maybe her last resort in times of dire stress. So country's gold being mortgaged was tantamount to people's mind as a signal and a symbol. Nothing could be more serious.
That was a period of anxiety and uncertainty. It was clear that India had lived beyond its means. N.K. Singh, chairman of the Review Committee for Fiscal Responsibility and Budget Management Act 2003, under the Ministry of Finance, was a joint secretary, Department of Economic Affairs in the same ministry in 1991.
When I walked into the Ministry of Finance, Dr. Manmohan Singh was just appointed finance minister. His first remarks to me were that we will usher a new India, we will sweep all these kinds of cobwebs which have kept India down. So his vision at that time, I realized, was a great vision. I felt that I didn't know, although at that time, what the contents would be, but we were in a great balance payment stress. We were living on a day-to-day. People were worried what is going to happen. The future looked very, very anxious. It was a period of anxiety and trepidation and uncertainty of what the future had in store. Where was India going to go?
Singh is talking of the time when the Indian economy was starved of money. It was also the time when the Soviet Union broke up, the Gulf War broke out, and there was a sharp fall in inward remittances. All this led to the balance of payment crisis, which surfaced during the period of Prime Minister Chandrasekhar, with Yashwant Sinha as the finance minister. By January 1991, the Chandrasekhar government convinced International Monetary Fund to approve two loans. By the middle of February, Rajiv Gandhi's Congress withdrew its support to the government. Before the general election could take place, Rajiv Gandhi was assassinated on 21st May, plunging the country into an even bigger crisis. Even as the World Bank and IMF issued statements reaffirming their support to India, it was clear that no fresh loans would come before the end of June. 20 tons of gold were sold, and the entire operation was cloaked in secrecy. The nation got to know of the gold sale only after a week. Between April and June 1991, NRIs withdrew over $900 million from their bank accounts, adding pressure to the foreign exchange balance. Manmohan Singh took charge of the finance ministry on June 24. By the time Manmohan Singh presented his budget on July 24, the country was staring at a foreign exchange reserve crisis. Reserves were so low that they wouldn't have lasted the end of the next fortnight. A week before this, N.K. Singh tells us, was particularly stressful.
Could you talk a little about the week before we actually opened up the market?
At that time, I was negotiating an agreement with the International Monetary Fund, the upper credit tranche agreement. And I was also simultaneously negotiating a structural adjustment loan with the World Bank. Both these were needed. They were like two wheels on which, you know, you had to ride on both these engines. Now, these characters realized that at that time, money didn't come free and there were no free lunches. There were a lot of difficult conditions. Conditions to open up the economy, conditions to deregulate the permission of foreign direct investment, financial capital market, and to basically free up India and to reduce government control and also bring government finances into, because we had lived beyond our means. We say this 1 week before was quite a peculiar period because I had just come back from Washington and there were allegations that that government had agreed to many conditions which would compromise government's sovereignty. So 1 week before that, there were many stories which were circulating that the budget had been leaked. In fact, 3 days before the budget, budget was presented, or 4 days before the budget, I was called by Dr. Manmohan Singh to say that the newspapers are going to carry out, publish a big story that the budget had already been settled with the IMF and the World Bank and the budget was leaked and therefore he would have to resign as the finance minister and so on. And I was so shaken by what he told me that I rang up and woke up an official in Washington at what was 3 a.m. Washington time to be assured that whatever we had discussed was safe in the custody of the bank and there was no question of leakage.
The need was first to stabilize balance payments, to stop living so much beyond the means, to look for ways to increase rates of growth, and more importantly, to see how to open up the country for greater foreign investment to flow in. With the nation's economy in flux, the role of bureaucracy, N.K. Singh realized, was also on way for a massive revamping.
Before that, did you have like an idea of what it would really do to bureaucracy?
I was a bureaucrat myself, and
exactly,
therefore I
why.
Knew that whatever I was negotiating would be a kind of shock and awe for the bureaucratic ethos. Bureaucracy survives in status quo being continued in perpetuity, that they had inherited a legacy which was quite a bit embedded in a non-questioning status quo. And that the bureaucracy would suddenly find, confronted with changes which he had not really imagined. Doing away with regulations and doing away with those things which had been taken to be fixed paradigms. Like for instance, one of the things which was subsequently announced in the budget was that for the first time the concept of some disinvestment, it wasn't, word disinvestment was a dirty word. Nobody even dreamt of privatization. But we had for the first time done it in a manner of bundling and unbundling of shares, which was tantamount. And this was considered so heretical that you were trying to disinvest from public undertaking? Gosh, this was rewriting the Bible or rewriting the Bhagavad Gita or the Quran. Private sector was anathema. Private sector was virtually considered someone whom you couldn't directly talk to but talk through associations and organizations, trade association, industry association, had a role to play because it was considered very inappropriate to talk to individual corporate leaders. India's corporate sector and corporate leaders were always in the shadow. They were not the people who were intermediating and talking publicly to government, privately, whatever may have happened.
Many changes were taking place. Many adjustments had to be made. Most people, even in the government, were not prepared. Manmohan Singh made sure the senior secretaries were called time and again and told about the meaning of the changes the economy was undergoing. He requested cabinet secretaries to hold meetings with secretaries so that at least there was some clarity.
I remember my conversation with the then Minister for Petroleum and Natural Gas, Mr. Shankar Anand. And I had been negotiating Asian Development Bank, a big loan for our petroleum and oil sector. And one of the conditions was that some minor disinvestment had to take place in ONGC. And I had taken Manmohan Singh with me to Mr. Shankar Anand. Reluctantly, he went, even though he was the finance minister. And when this was, he asked me, Dr. Manmohan Singh, to explain what the conditions were. And I said that some little disinvestment in the ONGC. Mr. Shankar Anand broke down and he came to tears and he said that what was being suggested, these are temples which have been built by the first prime minister. These are not public undertaking. They are the temples, modern temples of India. And broke down. He could not comprehend that there would be a world in which you would think of disinvestment of public undertaking.
For a listener who was born in a liberalized India, Shankar Anand's reaction would in all likelihood sound unimaginable. But this was the time when anything private was an anathema. The phase was challenging because what was happening was not just a series of policy changes, but primarily attitudinal changes.
Our first effort was to try and bring about a mindset change in the people who were the key actors in the economic scenario, which meant basically the Ministry of Finance, then the key economic ministry is Commerce. Because if you look at the role of commerce in those days, it was different. Trade was controlled. Freeing up trade was the then Commerce Minister, Mr. Chidambaram's item number one, even before he became Finance Minister. Or for instance, industrial de-licensing, which was the big thing. Dismantling the DGTD, the powerful, which I don't know if you still know what it meant, Director General of Technical Development, which were determining what technology you should use, what capacity you should produce. People were penalized for producing more than the license capacity said. instead of being awarded and recognized for they could produce, they were penalized because it went against licensing conditions. So,
after 1991, many years later, changes were still in progress. N.K. Singh was the revenue secretary in 1997 when the finance minister, P. Chidambaram, unveiled the famous dream budget. Singh accompanied Chidambaram for discussions with the prime minister with multiple tax options, the most audacious of which was the recalibration of income tax rates to the three slabs of 10%, 20%, 30% for rationalizing tax rates and ushering in a culture of compliance.
When I moved to the revenue department, tax compliance was low because tax rates were arbitrary, far too high, far too many. So in 1997, when we began working on the budget under Mr. Chidambaram's leadership, we worked out many options. And I had worked out two options of 10%, 20%, 30% on the personal income tax and similar rationalization of a much lower order on the corporate tax rates. And the other model, well, to be honest with you, there were discussions with the finance minister and myself. And there was a feeling, and he also had a feeling that perhaps a rate like 10, 20, 30 was not progressive enough for a country like India. To give an example, if, for instance, technically speaking, if somebody like, let's say, Mukesh Ambani would be taxed at the same rate as a secretary to government, there was obvious the same rate of 30, which is the highest rate. Whether this was progressive enough for a country like India, whether 10% or 20% was adequate compared to what tax rates were in others. And therefore, I must say that in all fairness, we did go to the then Prime Minister, Mr. H.D. Devi Gowda, before there. In all fairness to Mr. Chidambaram, he did ask me. His own preference was for a somewhat higher rate. I had a little preference, now looking back, for the somewhat lower rates of 10, 20, 30. And we presented both these options to the Prime Minister at that time. And his instinct was that India would be served better with somewhat more modest rates in terms of its value on compliance effect, on broadening the net. When he saw little hesitation on the part of the finance minister, he used this somewhat broken English to say, "Chidambaram ji, don't afraid." So there it was. It was somewhat a farmer's son who gave his imprimatur to the most audacious tax reforms, which could be viewed by somebody to be benefiting the more wealthy and the more affluent section. But be it said to the test of times that it has stood 10, 20, 30 with cesses and surcharges have been added. But broadly as a rate structure, it has stood the test of time what was introduced in 1997. And when these rates were really done, then at that stage, it was felt that this was the right time to give people a chance. And the famous voluntary disclosure income scheme was also launched at that time. It was part of the same so-called dream budget.
25 years later, liberalization is visible in several ways. In the form of the mobile phone revolution, in the increased number of cars on the roads, more options in literally everything, more disposable income among Indians. But despite all these celebrations, there are some misses, as we have also heard many of our previous interviewees say.
I was once in Washington and I was negotiating an arrangement with the IMF, and we were naturally a negotiator, wanting to get as much money with yielding as little condition as possible. And there was a German executive director in the IMF board, one Mr. Goose, and he said, "Look, India is like an injured tiger. It has caged itself for a long time. You shut yourself, you're going to sleep in a cage. It has been injured. So the tiger has come out of the cage. It is sprawling around right now. My own problem is that if you do not take a proper medicine, as soon as the wounds have been slightly healed, my fear is you'll go back to your cage and go back to sleep again. But I, for one, believe, having begun the negotiations from 1991, that what India did in 1991 may be in its own long-term interest, but it did so and was almost had no option but to do due to the compelling economic crisis and circumstances of that time. We are great ones to respond to a crisis, but we go back to our slumber and complacency rather easily.
Reforms are still required in the land, labour, agriculture sectors, among others, and N.K. Singh says this is over time India starts working towards it. Interview conducted by Ashwaq Masoodi. This podcast was produced by Anik Biswas.